All right, let's jump into this deep dive with Frederick Douglass. We've got these three speeches of his, and they're all from the 1880s, like 1883 to 1886.
Oh, wow. So this is like, what, 20 years after the Civil War? That's got to be a crazy time to be a Black American.
Yeah, definitely a time of huge transition. And Douglass, he was a powerful voice. I mean, he escaped slavery himself, so he's really giving us this unfiltered view of what progress had actually been made, but also all these challenges that were still there.
So it's like, where are things at 2 decades after the supposed freedom? That's fascinating.
Okay, so one of the things that really jumped out at me was like how Douglass talked about these colored conventions. Like back then, even some Black folks thought they were pointless, even harmful.
Yeah, I can see that. Like, why even bother kind of thing.
Right, but Douglass, he totally flips the script. He says, for a group facing such deep oppression, conventions aren't just a good idea, they're like essential. Absolutely necessary.
It's like, if the system's rigged against you, you got to create your own spaces to organize, to strategize, to make your voices heard.
Exactly. He makes this point that the law might say one thing, but the reality for Black people is totally different. He actually says, human law may know no distinction among men in respect of rights, but human practice may. Pretty powerful.
It's so true. He's talking about the color line, right? This invisible barrier that's everywhere, limiting Black people's lives in every single way. And conventions, those are like a way to fight back against it.
I never thought about it like that. But yeah, it's like a peaceful rebellion, a way to make people pay attention to the injustices.
And he's not messing around with his language either. Douglass says Black people are bound by every element of manhood to hold these conventions, to keep their grievances before the people and fight back against the wrongs done to them.
He even says they should scorn the councils of cowards and hang their banner on the outer wall. Wow. It's like, if you want freedom, you got to fight for it yourself.
You can't just sit around and wait for somebody to hand it to you. You have to demand it.
So right from the start, Douglass is not mincing words. He's like, let's get real here. And that leads us to how he talks about Black laborers in the South. It's wild how he frames this as not just a Black issue, but like something that affects all working people.
That's smart. Connecting it to a larger movement for labor rights. And he's totally right. Exploitation hurts everyone in the long run.
Yeah, he doesn't sugarcoat anything when he talks about Southern landowners either. It's like, yeah, the South might be booming economically, but Black laborers, they're stuck in poverty.
Like the whole system's rigged against them. And he gets into the specifics of it, right? How they got paid, the whole land situation.
Oh, yeah, like how wages were often paid, not in cash, but these orders upon shopkeepers. So basically, you're forced to shop at a specific store, often with inflated prices. It's a way to keep people trapped in debt.
And then the land rent. Douglass talks about these crazy high rents that Black farmers had to pay, just keeping them in debt forever. It's so messed up.
It's heartbreaking. And you know what some people said back then? They'd be like, well, if you don't like it, just leave.
Oh, come on. Like, that's even an option for most people.
Douglass called that out right away. He said it was a heartless suggestion because, let's be real, most Black laborers had zero savings, zero options. They couldn't just pack up and go.
It just shows how clueless some folks were about the reality of the situation. Like, Reconstruction had failed, and Black people were paying the price.
That's a good point. For our listeners who might not remember, Reconstruction was this period after the Civil War where the government was, like, trying to rebuild the South and integrate formerly enslaved people into society. But by the 1870s, those efforts were pretty much abandoned. And Douglass's speeches, they show us the consequences of that abandonment.
Yeah, it's all connected. And speaking of connecting things, Douglass also ties this labor exploitation to the need for education.
Right. He's a big advocate for education for everyone, not just Black folks, but everyone. He's like, it's not just good for individuals. It's vital for the entire nation to thrive.
I'm guessing this was pretty radical back then. Like, public education wasn't as common as it is now.
Totally. And he wasn't just talking in theory. Douglass brought up these shocking statistics from the 1880 census. Like, how many people couldn't even read, especially Black Americans? Like, how can you participate in society, build a life for yourself if you can't even read a newspaper?
Knowledge is power, right? And Douglass knew that. He saw education as a key to breaking free from these cycles of poverty and oppression.
And get this, it wasn't just complaining about the problem. He actually proposed solutions. He wanted a national system of education funded by the federal government. Like, way ahead of his time.
That's awesome. He was really thinking about how to make things better, not just pointing fingers.
Yeah, he even got super specific. He proposed a commission to investigate misuse of funds that were supposed to go to Black soldiers' bounties after the war. And then, whatever money was left, he wanted to give it to Black colleges.
I love that. He's like, okay, we've got this injustice. Here's a concrete way to start fixing it. Douglass was all about action.
So we've got him advocating for conventions, tackling economic exploitation, pushing for education. But there's also this underlying sense of disappointment in his speeches. Would you agree?
Yeah, definitely. Like, he's happy about some progress, but he's also super disillusioned with how far America has fallen short of its ideals.
He says it so well. He uses this metaphor, Dot. We stand today only in the twilight of American liberty. The sunbeams of perfect day are still behind the mountains.
It's like, yeah, freedom was declared, but it hasn't actually arrived for everyone. It's still out of reach.
So how does he explain this gap between what America claims to be and what's actually happening? What's holding it back, in his view?
Well, he doesn't hold back when it comes to criticizing both political parties, Republicans and Democrats. He calls them both out for failing to protect the rights of black citizens, as the Constitution says they should.
Yeah, he seems especially disgusted by the violence and disenfranchisement happening in the South, like black codes and stuff. These laws specifically designed to restrict the freedoms of black people.
It's like, okay, you say you're all about freedom and equality, but your actions say something completely different. Douglas calls out that hypocrisy loud and clear.
And that's where we'll pick things up in the next part of our deep dive. We'll see how Douglas explores this further and what he sees as the path forward.
This is getting good. Can't wait to dig in even deeper.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
Stay tuned. All right, so we left off talking about how Douglas just totally called out America's hypocrisy, right? Like, on paper, freedom for all, but in reality, not so much.
Yeah, and we were starting to get into how Douglas saw the legacy of slavery going way beyond just the laws. Like, it's something that's still affecting black people in really deep ways.
And this is where he gets into the lasting trauma of it all, like the psychological and physical toll of centuries of oppression. It's heavy stuff.
It really is. He goes beyond just saying slavery was bad. Like, he uses this incredibly vivid language to describe the impact it had. And you can just feel the damage it inflicted, you know, on generations of black people.
Right. And I think it's his own experience that makes it so powerful. He lived for slavery, so he's not just theorizing about it. He's speaking from a place of deep personal understanding.
Exactly. And you can really feel that in his words. And this leads to another point he makes, which is this idea that's been used to justify so much discrimination, this idea that black people are somehow inherently more likely to commit crimes.
Oh, man, yeah. That's a racist trope that's been around forever, using it to justify all kinds of violence and oppression.
And Douglas, he just dismantles that whole argument. He says, no, no, it is not nature that has erred in making the Negro. That shame rests with slavery.
It's so simple, but so powerful. He's like, look, if you treat people like animals for centuries, it's going to have an effect.
It's not rocket science. Any problems you see are a direct result of that system, not some innate characteristic of black people.
He's basically reframing the whole narrative, right? Placing the blame where it belongs, on the institution of slavery itself.
Okay, so we've heard Douglas's critique of the situation, his passionate defense of things like conventions and education, his analysis of how labor is being exploited. But what about solutions? Like, where do we go from here?
Well, he does offer some solutions, and it's interesting because he's totally against the idea of violent uprisings.
Yeah, that surprised me too. You might expect someone who went through the horrors of slavery to be more open to that kind of revolution, you know?
But Douglas, he was a pragmatist. He truly believed in the power of truth and justice, and he felt that a violent revolution would just be impractical and probably make things worse.
Okay, so what's the alternative? What does he propose instead?
Well, he's really skeptical of what he calls independent political action. He doesn't think black people should isolate themselves politically.
So not like a separate black political party or something?
Right. He thinks they need to work within the system, as flawed as it is, to create change.
That's interesting, especially considering how critical he was of both the Republicans and Democrats.
Yeah, he totally calls out their shortcomings, especially the Republicans for not doing enough to protect black rights. But he still thinks there's more potential there than in some kind of separate black political movement.
So it's like a strategic engagement, I guess. He's not naive about the challenges, but he thinks the best way forward is to keep pushing from within.
Exactly. And what's so inspiring is that even with all the criticism, there's this thread of hope that runs through his words.
Like this belief that truth and justice will win out in the end.
Yeah, he really believes it's possible to create a better future, even if it takes a long time and a lot of hard work.
It's like he's got this long view perspective, you know? Progress takes time, and you got to keep your eyes on the prize, as they say.
And what is that prize exactly? What's the future that Douglas is envisioning?
Well, he sees a future where black Americans are full participants in the nation's progress, you know, where the ideals of equality and justice aren't just words on paper, but a reality for everyone.
It's a powerful vision, and you can tell he genuinely believes it's attainable.
It's not just wishful thinking. He sees a path forward, even if it's a long and difficult one.
I think that's what makes Douglas so relevant, even today. his words speak to this ongoing struggle for equality that we're still fighting.
You're so right. We're still dealing with so many of the same issues he was talking about. Systemic racism, economic inequality, voting rights. Like, some things just haven't changed enough.
But his message of hope, his belief in the power of truth and justice, it's as relevant now as it was back then.
It's what keeps us going, you know? It's what fuels the fight.
So as we head into the final part of our deep dive, what would you say is the main takeaway for our listeners? What should they be thinking about after hearing all of this?
That's a good question. I think it's about recognizing how Douglass's insights challenge all of us, both as individuals and as a society, to actually live up to those ideals of justice and equality.
Yeah, he's not letting anyone off the hook. It's on all of us to make things right.
Welcome back to our deep dive. We've been exploring all these different facets of Frederick Douglass's thinking, right? Like his take on conventions, how he analyzed labor exploitation, his big push for education, and that whole idea of America not living up to its promise of liberty.
Oh, yeah. And we talked about how he saw the legacy of slavery as something that went way beyond just laws and zada, like the deep scars it left on Black people.
And we even got into how he rejected violence as a path to change, and instead believed in working strategically within the system, you know, to make things better from the inside.
Right, right. But before we wrap things up, I want to go back to what I think is the most powerful theme running through all of Douglass's speeches, and that's hope.
I know, right? It's amazing how, even though he's so honest about all the injustices Black Americans were facing, he never loses sight of that possibility for a better future.
And I think that's why his words still hit so hard today. Like, we're still dealing with a lot of the same stuff he was talking about over 100 years ago. It's crazy.
I know. It's like the struggle for racial justice, economic equality, true political inclusion. It often feels like we haven't come far enough.
Yeah, it can be discouraging. But then you read Douglass and his faith in the power of truth and justice. It's like this reminder that things can change, that progress is possible.
He definitely doesn't sugarcoat anything, but he also doesn't let us fall into despair. He's like, look, there's going to be tough, but we got to keep pushing forward.
He doesn't offer any quick fixes or easy answers. It's all about sustained effort, strategic engagement, and this deep belief that ultimately truth will win out over injustice.
And that's such a relevant message for today, right? I mean, look around. We see so many people, so many communities fighting for justice, working so hard to make Douglass's vision of a more equitable America a reality.
It's like he's still with us in a way. His legacy lives on in every act of courage, every voice that's raised against injustice, every step towards a more just and equitable society.
That's a beautiful way to put it. It's not about worshiping him as some perfect figure from the past. It's about taking his insights and using them to fuel the work that needs to be done right now.
Absolutely. Frederick Douglass's words are still challenging us, inspiring us, reminding us that the fight for a better world is never really over. It's a constant process.
So to wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with one final thought from Douglass himself. He said, "If there is no struggle, there is no progress."
And there you have it, folks. The pursuit of justice requires action. It requires us to be engaged, be willing to keep pushing forward, even when it's hard.
Thanks for joining us on this journey into the world of Frederick Douglass. We hope you found it insightful and hopefully inspiring. We'll see you next time for another deep dive.